This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Keeping Up with the Kardashians. We've lasted for 6 episodes, Anne. How do you feel about that?
I feel like it's a true test on our marriage.
Yeah, we've survived many, many ordeals so far. Yeah. And, you know, it's really going well on the Baby Tribe. We've had an amazing episode, episode number 6. Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, what?
No, I'm just laughing. It's going really well. The Baby Tribe is brilliant.
Yeah, the Baby Tribe is brilliant. Yeah. We are number one in the parenting and the kids
well
and family.
Deserved. Well deserved.
I'm detecting a hint of sarcasm.
It is absolutely well deserved.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I did get a text though from a friend.
Oh.
Who was commenting on the parade of blonde women coming in and out of the garden room.
Whatever do you mean, Anne?
No, seriously. Like there was like, well, there's the lovely Katie Mugan, and in fairness, like she's fabulous.
Yeah. Right?
And Katie's our good old pal.
Yeah.
Then Anna Geary.
Yeah.
Then Orla Franklin, who you've always had a bit of hero worship for.
Okay, hold on. You're giving away our future guests.
It's only a few of them. And then Nicola Hamilton Fox.
Okay, you're giving away a lot of our future guests.
Okay, I suppose what my friend was asking.
Yeah.
Was like, is it only blonde women that you're interviewing on the pod?
Listen, the Baby Tribe is an equal opportunities employer.
For blonde brunettes and redheads.
Listen, I can't determine the hair colour of the guests that come. They just all happen to be blondes for a while. And now that you're mentioning it, I'm wondering what the neighbours think, because I do batch the interviews for about a week at midterm when you were working and I wasn't.
There's been a string of
blonde women coming in and out of the
and
house.
In fact, the text suggested that I should put a nanny cam in the guard room, because basically every hour or two a new blonde woman arrived.
I'm sorry, do you see how many cameras are in front of us? Like there's so much evidence.
You control when these cameras are on. But there was just like a random like parade of blonde women every couple of hours, and then you go into the garden room and the blinds would go down, and about
an
hour later,
well, that's to ensure adequate lighting, excuse me,
and then
hold on.
About an hour later the nice blonde lady would leave and you'd have another one arriving 2 hours later after that. So
yeah, I admit that does look bad.
Highly suspect.
But they're all, it's all above board.
It's all legit, is it?
It's all legit. It's all above. Fair enough. You're not blonde and you're on the podcast.
I know. I'm like the lone, well, I'm not even brunette anymore. I'm graying. But maybe I'm graying in the hope that I look fairer to you. Who knows?
I know. Well, sorry, it's the Arab in me. We love blondes. We love fair-skinned people. That's how we were raised.
Is it really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's funny how, like in the Arab world, people love white skin and we think white skin is amazing. Yet when we now come to Europe, everyone's trying to look dark.
All the Irish girls are like tangled.
Yeah, exactly. And we're like, I'm sorry. Why are you trying to look like us? This is ridiculous.
Trying to look pale. That's true, actually.
And you know, back home there are creams that make you look paler.
Yes,
and some people put them on to look paler because they don't like their tan skin.
It's hilarious.
It's just amazing that people just go after what they don't have.
Well, our daughter's definitely an Irish girl then, because she's desperate to look browner.
Yeah, well, she's got the mix where she kind of gets a whiff of the sun and she'll turn brown.
Yeah.
Whereas you get a whiff of the sun and you turn freckly and burnt.
I don't burn that much, like. No, I think, I just don't brown anymore. I just get freckly.
The harsh Kuwaiti sun has really sort of seasoned your skin, you know.
Oh, Jesus. Fief. That's a lovely thing to say to a woman. Wow.
Sorry.
Okay, so you're grey-haired, harsh-skinned...
I said seasoned.
Oh, sorry. The harsh sun is seasoned skin wife.
Yeah.
Jesus.
That's a compliment.
No, that's not a fief.
Okay. Anyway, let's move on. Let's talk about. let's talk about what we talked about on the Baby Tribe. You've listened to this week's episode. I edited it in advance so that you could listen to it.
And then I told you that you had to re-edit it a bit because you had banjaxed the sound. But that's fine.
Yeah, you picked up on a sound leveling issue. Yeah.
Helped.
All the podcast course, production course hasn't really helped really with my with my editing skills. But yeah, no, thank you for picking that up. And listeners who have listened to the Baby Tribe episode this week will see that the sound has been immaculate because Anne picked it up. And I fixed it.
Proof that I did my homework.
But it's a very popular episode. Even the reels that I put up during the week or over the weekend actually had a lot of likes and follows and looks and views. So, you know, sugar in diet, I think, is a very topical issue. It's something that I think we need more education on.
100%. But I'm actually trying to not say 100% every 2 minutes because I've realized from listening to the reels that I say 100%.
I blame Joanne and Vogue for this, by the way. Because
for the 100%?
Yeah, because that
I've always said that.
That only became a thing because they always say 100% about everything.
I've always said that.
Okay, maybe. Maybe you're the OG 100%er.
I'm the OG everything. The OG, let me see. I'm the OG grey-haired, season-skinned
person. I didn't call you grey-haired. You called yourself grey-haired.
Yeah, you're not getting away with that too quickly now. Anyway, yeah, the whole sugar in the diet business, I think it's really good to have a conversation about good sugar, bad sugar.
Yeah, because on the Baby Tribe episode, we discussed fructose. Mm. We discussed how...
Fructose is evil.
In huge amounts. Mm. Yeah. And we've actually discussed how the labeling on foods can be a bit misleading.
Yeah.
When you label something as no added sugar or full of natural sugars, it may make you think that this is healthy.
Mm.
But when you actually look at the content of sugar in a small packet, for the example I gave in 100 gram or 100 mil packet of puree, some of them have 12 grams of sugar. So that's 12.5%-ish. Of sugar.
Yeah.
And, you know, a 1 to 2 year old only needs about 10 to 15, maybe 15, 16 grams of sugar in a day. So they could consume almost the entire daily recommended intake of sugar in one sitting in a short period of time.
Yeah.
And we've also discussed how, you know, eating whole fruits when the fructose or the sugar is mixed in with fiber, that's actually good for you because it feeds the good bacteria in your gut. Whereas when fructose is free in the abdomen or free in the gut, it actually can do a lot of damaging things. But you've done a lot of interesting research on...
I did a bit of reading. I read things sometimes.
Yeah, you do read things sometimes. And you're going to tell us about what happens when we eat fructose and an interesting implication of fructose in the development of preeclampsia.
Yeah, so... I know that you already touched on the fact that like fructose, it's a simple sugar like glucose, but it's twice as sweet. So all of the really sweet tasting things that we eat, it's that sweet because of the fructose. What happens when we eat fructose? So some of the fructose, when it goes into our gut, is immediately converted to triglycerides and absorbed into the bloodstream. And we know that very high serum triglycerides, it's an independent risk factor for cardiovascular disease. And when the triglycerides are very high, say in the top 25% population, the highest quartile, say, of people, if they had all their serum triglycerides checked, they would have up to a fourfold increase in cardiovascular disease just because of that one risk factor.
And triglycerides are a kind of fat.
It's a kind of fat. You don't want to eat tons and tons of fructose because you're just upping your serum triglycerides in the period afterwards. But the other thing is that they do, and you alluded to it earlier on, is they change the proteins in your gut lining. And there's lots of different kind of chemical reactions that can happen to change protein functions in the body. And one of them is phosphorylation. Okay. And what they do is they phosphorylate those gut proteins and they render them, instead of those gut proteins are tight junctions. So they're designed to be impermeable to the toxic gunk that sits in our gut. Because your gut is completely open to the outside world and we shovel all kinds of stuff into it. And your body has a variety of different defenses and filters for that stuff to take the good out and try and leave the bad bits behind. And one of those things is the tight junctions. And when those tight junctions become phosphorylated by the fructose, they become leaky. And that's where your leaky gut comes from. And that's what people talk about, leaky gut syndromes from sugar. It's because of that reaction.
And that's after fructose actually break down the first defensive layer, which is the mucus layer.
I'm going to talk about that in a second.
Sorry, yeah. I jumped the gun.
No, that's okay. So that's what makes it temporarily leaky. But what it does then is it allows the absorptions of endotoxins into the bloodstream. And those endotoxins, they sound bad because they've got the word toxin in them, but they are bad. And those endotoxins then create that inflammatory response in the body. It starts alerting your immune system that there's toxins, and it starts a pro-inflammatory process. So that's why people hear, oh, don't eat fructose, don't eat high sugar, it'll cause inflammation, it'll cause leaky gut, it'll cause high fat levels in your blood. That's part of the reason. That is actually what happens. Now, you mentioned about fiber. So what we feed ourselves, we feed our microbiome, and I know you love the microbiome. Fructose is present in a lot of fruit, but it's present with fiber. So what happens is when you eat fructose with fiber, the fiber lines and coats the first part of your gut so that the fructose moves down into the next part of your gut where it actually feeds your microbiome. And your microbiome likes the fructose. It does well with fructose when it reaches that level. Okay, so it allows the fiber allows the mucin layer of the gut to be really healthy, and it feeds bacteria at the right part of your gut with the fructose. So it doesn't feed you, it feeds your bacteria. So you need to ingest fructose with fiber, which means eating the whole fruit, not just the juices. Everything should have pulp and all those kind of things. And ideally you just eat the orange instead of drinking the orange juice, because that's what makes it healthy. If you eat loads of fructose without fiber, you actually get dysregulation of your microbiome production of bile acids. One of the things that they do for us is that they help in the production and maintenance of your bile acids in your gut, which helps with your fat absorption and things like that. And it does it in a healthy way. It helps with your fatty acid absorption in a healthy way. So when you feed your microbiome fructose at the wrong part of your gut by eating highly processed foods, you actually get a dysregulated microbiome and your bile acids suffer. So therefore your fat absorption is different. It's not done in a healthy way. So then the other thing that happens when you eat loads of fructose is some of the fructose goes directly into your portal vein and goes straight to your liver. And this is where we end up with problems. So high fructose in the liver increases your risk of a couple of fatty liver disorders. One is called non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, and the other one is called non-alcoholic steatohepatitis. Okay, so two big words. And basically what it is, it's just deposition of fat into the liver because of the high fructose influencing the metabolism and production of fat. It's not the triglycerides in your blood that come from the fructose earlier on. It's actually how it changes the metabolism of fat in your liver. And what that does is it gives you some hepatitis. So it gives you some liver inflammation. It predisposes you to liver cirrhosis if it's over a very prolonged period of time. And that can result in an increased risk for liver failure at a later stage in life. So it's really, really significant. It is something that we need to be aware of.
Fructose, to people that don't know, is the actual sweet component of the sugar.
Yeah.
It's one of the monosaccharides or the basic sugars, the other one being glucose, the other one being galactose. Mm. We live on glucose. Mm. Glucose is not as sweet as fructose.
No, and a lot fructose of is twice as sweet as glucose.
And a lot of the processed foods contain an abundance of fructose, sometimes 50, 60, 70%.
And it's the added, it's basically a high fructose corn syrup that's added to processed food to make it taste good, to make you want more.
And it is highly addictive.
Yeah, it actually influences your satiety function as well. So you just don't feel like you've had enough. And the food production and the food industry knows this.
Yeah.
So it means that instead of reaching for the orange, you're reaching for the orange flavoured syrupy drink.
Or the bar of chocolate.
Or the bar of chocolate.
Or the ice cream.
You know, if you feel like you want something
it's
orange,
really hard talking about this when I'm fasting, by the way.
You'll survive. It's just we I think we just need to be a little bit more informed of the impact of those choices.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to make it a little bit accessible, but I'm worried it's a bit boring to listen to.
Go on.
So I'll do
people
my
love
best.
People love nerdy bits, nerdy and for bits. A change, it's not me doing the nerdy segment; okay. It's you doing the nerdy okay. segment.
So the weird, the other thing that happens in the liver actually is that the metabolic changes associated with fructose influence how your cells can produce energy. The energy production parts of the cell are called mitochondria. You get mitochondrial dysfunction. Okay, you get increased uric acid because it shunts things down a different pathway just by it being there. So you get this low energy state, you get increased uric acid, and that kind of you get insulin resistance and you get metabolic syndrome. So you get all of those things with the higher triglycerides. So you're really setting yourself up for some cardiovascular issues in the long term, apart from all of the liver stuff and the microbiome stuff as well. It's a huge problem. And when you think about it, if you have somebody who is regularly ingesting high fructose foods, they are disturbing their microbiome, they're disturbing their metabolic pathways. So I think we have to start looking at things like obesity, metabolic syndrome, in terms of like the high fats and all those kind of things, as a metabolic disease rather than just a social issue. You know, people, we've created such a social construct of beauty being about a specific shape, but we're flooding the shops with all of these foods that are readily accessible that are inducing metabolic changes and metabolic disorders in people, and one of which, the side effects of which, is obesity. So it's not... Like, I think we need to look at this differently, and I think we need to start approaching this differently.
I mean, I love the way you put it. You've always put it in such a nice way about how the key is to becoming healthy rather than look better to a societal expectation or norm.
Like, it's not that long ago where being really curvy was the sexy thing to be.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, body shapes are fads and trends. You know, it's just, look at eyebrows for the last 20 years. They've been significantly different every 5 years. But the cool body shape changes every couple of decades. I wouldn't worry about body shape. Let's look at the metabolic disorders associated with the food industry feeding us and programming us to want things that are not good for us.
I would say that 95% of men did not notice the change in eyebrows over the last 20 years. I'm sure I know I haven't. And yeah, this is news to me. I think it's all you do it for each other, you know.
100%.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't think guys look at eyebrows that often, in fairness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, so we talked about fructose and how, you know, glucose is what we essentially use.
Yes.
Fructose, we do not need fructose. Do you know who needs fructose though?
The bacteria in our tummy?
Yep.
Who?
Fetuses.
Okay. Really?
Yep.
I did not know that.
Yep.
Feti.
Fetuses?
Is fetuses or is it feti? We should know this.
Yeah, I know. We'll just call them them babies in the uterus. Yeah. Okay. So fructose has a critical role in fetal growth in early pregnancy.
Hold on a second. Are you sure?
Yep.
Okay, that's very interesting.
Okay, so I've been reading again. Okay. So there are some species on this planet who, as adults of their species, need fructose. And they utilize the fact that it packs fat into their liver and gives them insulin resistance and packs fat onto them before they go hibernating in the winter. So it's a way to really bulk up in terms of fat and reserves.
Okay.
But that's grand if you're not eating for the next 3 months. We don't work like that. And then babies in utero, fructose metabolism is really efficient in low oxygen environments. So really, really early in pregnancy, before the placenta is established, so in the first trimester, fructose is what the baby uses.
Wow.
In normal pregnancy, the placenta produces fructose from glucose in the first trimester to assist fetal growth and survival when oxygen is scarce. So fructose is preferred over glucose in hypoxic tissues. The fetal liver, the kidney and the fetal lung may also produce fructose from glucose, we think.
But you've said something interesting. Even though the fetus needs fructose, the placenta makes it from glucose.
The placenta is formed from the baby's genetics.
So the mother doesn't need to consume fructose?
No, the mum consumes glucose as normal, and the placenta and potentially some early fetal organs transform it into fructose because it actually assists in programming those metabolic pathways to work really efficiently in hypoxic environments. Super early in pregnancy, the baby's working off like 20% of the mother's oxygen levels.
Yeah.
And in fact, there's a stage in very early pregnancy where having availability of too much oxygen to the baby is toxic, because oxygen is actually a very reactive chemical. So you need to control it. And we've evolved lots of ways to control how we're exposed to oxygen. Placental fructose production will decrease at the end of the first trimester, early second trimester, when the placenta has fully established access to the maternal blood and oxygen supplies. So then it goes from 20% up to 50%, and that switch from fructose to glucose happens. There's very little exposure for the mother to fetal fructose because the two are kind of fairly separate, and because that switch happens once the baby has access to the maternal blood. Blood vessels, not blood per se, but blood vessels. Okay. So, but if you get placental growth impairment in the first and second trimester, you get persisting fructose metabolism. So if you've got a poor placenta developing, and we talked last week about things like the immune response and stuff and how that influences placental invasion and issues with placentation related to preeclampsia in later pregnancy or fetal growth restriction. So if you don't have that optimal oxygen exposure, you can still get persistence of that glucose to fructose transformation. So you have a baby still utilizing fructose because it's so efficient to grow in a hypoxic environment. It'll maintain some fructose production, and it protects against the hypoxia by reducing the oxygen needs because it decreases your mitochondrial function and favours different metabolic pathways for the function, for the production of energy. Okay, am I getting too nerdy on you?
No, I'm actually fascinated. Yeah. Okay.
And then when you think about it, high circulating fructose in humans, what's it associated with? We just went through this.
Inflammation.
Metabolic syndrome, inflammation, hypertension, leaky blood vessels, insulin resistance, fatty liver, high uric acid, high vasopressin, which is what you get in early pregnancy as well, if in preeclampsia.
Yeah.
So you get all that fluid retention and that puffiness. So now they're wondering, is fructose part of the missing link in terms of the systemic multi-system disorder that is preeclampsia and later pregnancy?
Fructose is quite evil.
Well, fructose is inherently necessary.
Yeah.
I think what's quite evil is the fact that the food industry has pushed so much fructose into the food that we buy on the daily basis.
Yeah.
Regardless of the health implications of the same.
And it's crazy because we spoke about this before when we heard the statistic that in the States, it is estimated that about 80% of the population are in a chronic inflammation state.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's quite similar here.
Well, I'd say so. But like, I think, you know, once you start into that inflammatory state, that can be, and it's the whole microbiome, immune, leaky gut, metabolic syndrome, it just spirals because now you're into a low energy production state and you just don't feel well, and your satiety has been influenced by all of the junk that's been going into your body. So, you know, it comes down to, we need to go back to, the food on your plate should look like the ingredients it came from.
And have lots of colours.
And have lots of real colours, not fake colours.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So not colouring colours.
Yeah. Yeah. Natural colours.
Natural colours. Yeah. So, you know, I think in Ireland we're blessed in that we have a really strong agricultural base. And like, we've grass-fed beef.
Yeah.
there's some countries who never come across grass-fed beef,
yeah.
you know, so they don't come across, grass-fed beef is good for you, grass-fed butter is good for you, you know, and there's, we've always grown up not having that.
Yeah.
So we've been blessed. So I think we just need to exploit our really strong, solid base in cooking good, wholesome food. And obviously we all, and we do this regularly where you're getting, you know, the takeaway or getting the ready meal out because it's just been one of those days.
I have been really bad at this Ramadan, like takeaway every other day and sometimes two bars of chocolate in the evening because I feel I've earned it after fasting all day, but I know that's the worst thing to do.
But if you do it for 1 month, fine. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
like nobody's perfect.
I do feel pretty rotten.
But if it spirals, and I'd say you probably would feel better if you didn't do that, you know.
I know, but I can't help it.
That's okay. Sure, look at me. I spiral into like a huge, like 3 or 4 day chocolate binge sometimes.
Yeah.
That's okay too. None of us are perfect. But I suppose it's just...
But you're perfect, baby, in every way.
Oh, sick.
Anyway, we're coming to the end of today's episode.
Okay. I hope I haven't bored people.
I don't think you have. People love the nerdy segment. People are always asking us for more Afif's nerdy segment. So for the Kafashians, this is going to be Anne's nerdy segment.
Yay.
And I'm going to be the cool guy for a change.
Stop.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. We hope that you enjoyed it. We hope that you found value. Thank you so much for subscribing. Thank you so much for being here on the bonus material. It really helps us develop this show and also the baby tribe. I'm off to get my whitening cream.
And I'm off to get a nanny cam.
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Head Stuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.